The following presentation is part of the Master Teacher series from Faith Builders. For more information on Faith Builders events, visit fbep.org.
Can't help but make a comment on Shannon's comments. Guess what we're planning to do this year? Build some mini barns. Is that right, Shannon? Good. And seeing the multitudes, he went up into a mountain. And when he was set, his disciples came unto him, and he opened his mouth and taught them, saying. And then we have the Sermon on the Mount. My responsibility this morning is to talk a little bit about the techniques that the master teacher used. And I was thinking to myself, as I studied over this subject, well, what would I say that was much different than what has already been said this week? And what would I say that you probably haven't heard many times before? This is the way Jesus taught. Well, I don't claim to have listed anything here that is highly unique, but I did try to think of a few things that perhaps we had not discussed a lot before, this week at least. Now, if I understand this assignment right, it has to do with technique, or if you think of a body of information or truth, and you think of students or persons, and we want to find a way to get this information accurately communicated from this point, this body of information, to the person. And the assumption here, I guess, is that there are techniques by which that may be accomplished. We can look into the example of Jesus Christ, this person who we call God. And obviously, he ought to know how to teach. And if we can just pull some of these techniques out and talk about them a little bit this morning, I hope they'll be helpful to you. I'd like to say, first of all, that technique follows function. Techniques in themselves don't mean much. You can learn all of the techniques and methodology that you want to. But for myself, at least as a teacher, it flows out of the function. Whatever it is that I want to accomplish, I set that first. Firmly in my mind, what do I want to do? Now, you go to any teacher's college, and when they tell you how to lay out lesson plans, they're going to tell you. First of all, lay down your goal. What is it that you want to get done? What is it you want to accomplish in this class? And once you have that down, perhaps you can begin to fill in the kind of techniques that you need to fill in. And so I just would say that to begin with. As a school teacher, it is important to have that fastened securely in your mind. What is it that I'm trying to accomplish? And we've already heard this morning a very general statement. We want to convey Christ. Christ is all of life. Now, that's so general, I know, that when you're walking into mathematics class, that it's going to be a little tough to stand in front of the math class and say, well, for me to live is Christ, and that is the function of this class, and so when I teach you these number facts, that's the whole point. So I realize that there is a lot of sub-functions that come under that, but technique follows function. I'd like to say, secondly, that our teaching ought to lead people to think. And we want to look at some of these techniques this morning within that context. The first one that I have is actually a very general idea to which all the other techniques that I'm going to give to you are subsets. The first one I have seven of them. Number one is embodied in three words. He loved them. Now, it is a technique, mind you. Now, you think that through. He loved them. All other techniques that you bring to the classroom, I can tell you right now, if they're successful, they are a subset of that one. You must love the youngsters first. And I don't want to be saying that love is a technique. That sounds wrong. But there is a quality to that from which all of the other techniques hang. And if it's not there, you may as well forget it. I overheard two students one time who had just been spanked by a teacher. And they were crying. And as I walked by the door, I heard them talking in the room. And I knew a little bit about this situation, was involved in it somewhat. And I heard them say something like this. He does really care about us. Now, they were saying that through their tears. It was a most unusual thing to have heard after some students had been spanked. But it said volumes about what was actually happening in that situation. See, the students had been spanked, and sometimes that results in people being bitter or angry, but they knew that that teacher loved them. And that's what made the spanking effective. And any other technique that I may speak of here, I'm telling you, it'll be ineffective if this one is not in place. I've made this statement before, and I don't know if it's quite accurate, but I think it's pretty accurate. You can make a lot of mistakes in a classroom, and you will be forgiven over and over and over again if the student knows that you love them. But you can be almost perfect and make one mistake, and if that student knows that you do not love him, he'll make hay without him. I will guarantee you. Don't ever forget that. Students, they pick this up. It doesn't take them real long to find out if this technique is active in your experience, if you love them. Now, unfortunately, I cannot do very well in explaining to you how you love somebody. You hear these lists of things sometimes. Well, I'm not quite sure what list to give you. But when the Lord is in us and God is in us, and if we take what Brother Tim said to us and this grows in us, we will love these students. And the rest of these that I give to you then will really work. But if that one isn't there, mind you, I just repeat, you won't get any of the other ones to work effectively. You've got to love them. Jesus, instead of him, he loved them to the end. Quite a statement. Even when they turned their backs on him and all of those things, he loved them to the end. That made his teaching very, very effective. Don't go in the classroom if you don't know how to love people. It'll be a mistake. Number two is embodied in the word. We're speaking of technique now. It's embodied in the word discipleship. This is a technique. I guess maybe it's more of a model. Now, I don't think it's any news to most of you that this is the model that Faith Builders has really striven to bring to the forefront, both in what we're doing here and in our pedagogy. We speak of training teachers. We speak of the discipleship model. There's a lot in that word. It says an awful lot about what you intend to do. Remember, here's a body of truth. Here's a person or students. We're looking for techniques. We're saying the method is discipleship. Well, what do we mean? Well, we mean I as a person. If I'm doing the teaching, we're not going to call ourselves masters. We'll call ourselves mentors. We'll call ourselves teachers. Something of this nature, but our intention is to pass something along in a personal way. I think this so strongly that I don't mind telling you that I don't consider it a mistake to have people do mathematics kind of the way I do it. Now, there might be a couple of different ways to do a couple of things. Let's say some algebra problems. But I like students to do it my way. Now, I don't say that to say that my way is the best way, but we disciple. This is a technique. This is a method that is involved. And obviously, that's what Jesus did. He did it in such an intensive way that I wonder sometimes if we've learned this method. Took these 12 men, gathered them around him, and it looks to me, from what I can tell in Scripture, they kind of slept where he slept oftentimes, and ate where he ate, and walked where he walked, and rode in the same boats that he rode in, and did all of these things. And so day by day, as the hours went by, he discipled them. And we bring into our classroom this same kind of technique model. We are going to disciple. Now that reflects on me and gives me good reason to take a good look at myself. Do I want that person, or is it a good idea for that person to do algebra the way I do it? Now maybe that's not all that important, but think of the larger issues of life. If I want to use this model and this technique, well then God help me, I had better be the kind of model, the kind of person that I can say, do it this way. Like Paul said, follow me as I follow Christ. That's the model. Technique number three that I would like to share with you is one that I find very, very interesting. You're going to be surprised probably. Audible public prayer is a technique. Let me turn you to a passage that I've always found very strange. Matthew chapter 11. Not strange, but interesting. Matthew chapter 11, you have Jesus. Speaking to his disciples, the messengers from John the Baptist have come, and John Baptist has these questions, and he lays these questions before the Lord, and the Lord answers. And then when the disciples of John left and took that message back, then Jesus began to say some more to the disciples. And he's talking to them. He's kind of like giving them a little lecture. Right in the middle of the lecture, verse 25. Well, let me read verse 24. But I say unto you, that it shall be more tolerable for the land of Sodom in the day of judgment than for thee. At that time, Jesus answered and said, I thank thee, O Father, Lord of heaven and earth. He launches right into a prayer. Because thou hast hid these things from the wise and prudent, and hast revealed them unto babes. Even so, Father, for so it seemed good in thy sight. And then he seems to jump right out of it. All things are delivered unto me of my Father. He doesn't seem to be addressing God anymore. Goes back to talking to his disciples. And it looks as if what he's doing is he's just, here come these disciples of John. They ask a question, he answers them, then he begins to lecture the disciples. So right in the middle of the lecture, he just breaks into a prayer. And then he breaks right back into the lecture. And goes on. And you know, the disciples said to Jesus one time, teach us to pray. They had been taught something through the prayers of Jesus Christ that was very, very unique. In fact, let's turn to Luke chapter 11. Verses 1 to 13. I don't think I'm going to look at that entire passage, but if you read down through there, what did they start out with? And it came to pass that as he was praying in a certain place, when he ceased. It looks as though the disciples were gathered around him and he was praying. One of his disciples said unto him, Lord, teach us to pray. Doesn't say teach us how to pray. Teach us to pray. And, well, as John also taught his disciples. Now, we do not typically go out here. At least I don't have a class in teaching people to pray. But it looks as though John did this and Jesus came along and the disciples said, teach us to pray. And then we have a number of prayers that are actually recorded in Scripture. I just wonder if we have not left something unturned when we have not paid attention to what may be taught through prayer. And I'm not talking only of going home and getting in my closet and praying that God helps me, but also when I pray publicly. Apparently Jesus taught them something in that process. Pay attention to it. Technique number four. Let me say something before I go to this one. Did it ever occur to you that Jesus did not seem to be... Well, I know he wasn't taught by psychologists. And he did not seem to have what we would call social graces, at least what's recorded. Now, obviously, there are parts of what actually happened left out. And so maybe things were a little different than what they looked like. But he goes, for example, to lunch with some people, and when he sits down, he says to them, now, when you invite people for lunch, you should not invite people who can invite you back. You should invite the poor and so forth and so on. Now, what would you do? If you had made a nice meal for somebody, they came in, and the first thing they did was kind of criticized you for doing this meal thing and having people in who, your friends and neighbors and so on, who, they're nice people. They'll probably invite you back. They treat you nicely and all of that. And he just criticizes you. Well, the technique I have here is rebuke and confrontation. Rebuke and confrontation. Luke chapter 22. Now, maybe there's just more of this type of thing recorded than the times when Jesus was just nicely doing things. I don't know. But you find this so often that Jesus is rebuking. Verse 24 of chapter 22, and there was also a strife among them, which of them should be accounted the greatest. Now I want you to notice how he rebukes them, though. He does not take them aside, at least not to our knowledge, and says, now you fellows are way off track, and now you have to get straightened out, or this whole thing's going to fall apart. No. He says, the kings of the Gentiles exercise lordship over them, and they that exercise authority upon them are called benefactors. But ye shall not be so. Rebuke. But he that is greatest among you, let him be as the younger, and he that is chief, as he that doth serve. For whether is greater, he that sitteth at meat, or he that serveth, is not he that sitteth at meat. But I am among you as he that serveth. Again, Brother Tim already spoke on this particular idea. Service. But Jesus did this often. And you will need to rebuke your students. For you first-year teachers, just let me tell you something. You're going to have to get over the business of wanting the students to like you all the time and to agree with you all the time. Shannon made reference to this. There are times to teach them, you will need to rebuke them, you will need to use this technique. And they won't like you at the time, but they will later probably. They likely will. I could say that for myself, some of the most outstanding learning experiences in life has been when I have been rebuked. I remember a few times as an older teenager of my father giving me severe rebuke. He didn't paddle me, he severely rebuked me. It was good. It was good. I didn't like it at the time at all. Not one bit. Neither will your students. But I'm telling you, it's a technique that you might as well put into your techniques that you use. Now, mind you, he loved them. Then he rebuked them. So this is a subset. If you rebuke them and they think that you don't love them, or they know that you don't love them, the rebuke won't work. But if you love them and rebuke them, yeah, then it works out something different in their lives. Technique number five. Adversity/opportunity. Or another way of saying it, adversity equals opportunity. Jesus took difficult situations oftentimes and turned them into a great opportunity to teach people. Let's turn to a passage on this one. Matthew chapter 8. We see him at work. 23 to 27. You know the story. I'll just read it to you. Just let it soak in. And when he was entered into a ship, his disciples followed him. And behold, there arose a great tempest in the sea, insomuch that the ship was covered with the waves, but he was asleep. That was a lesson in itself. Just the fact that he was sleeping while all of this was going on. And his disciples came to him and awoke him, saying, Lord, save us, we perish. And he saith unto them, Why are ye fearful, O ye of little faith? Then he arose and rebuked the winds and the sea, and there was a great calm. But the men marveled, saying, What manner of man is this, that even the winds and the sea obey him? Now my point here is this. None of us like adversity. None of us like difficulty. None of us like the struggles that seem to be inherent in the classroom. The slow learner, or whatever it may be. I'm calling that adversity. I'm calling that difficult circumstances. But if Jesus had never had the storm, if he wasn't in the ship, the storm had not come up, this lesson would not have been taught. So his technique, turn an adversity into an opportunity. Don't let it be something that drowns you, but rather take that adversity, that difficulty that is tossed into your hands, I think, by the Lord, and change it into an opportunity. That's a great technique, and I can tell you that the teachers who do that well are your best teachers. Adversity to opportunity is what we are after in this case. And in my life, just in my experience, and I'm almost sure that this is true of you, your greatest learning experiences were in those cases, weren't they? When it was the toughest going, and you wondered which end was up and which end was down. That's when you learn. Okay? And whoever can grab that opportunity, like Jesus did, and just extend a teaching, they are the good teacher. And they have learned a method that Jesus used himself. Technique number six in education. Educators will use the term Socratic method, or the method of questioning. Now, Jesus did this a lot. Now, remember I said at the beginning that we need to learn how to lead people to think. And I'm amazed at how Jesus would do this. Have you ever had somebody ask you a question? Maybe not even ask a question, but make a comment that raised a question in your mind. And for days, you would just tangle with that thing. What did he mean? Or what was that about? And you might even linger over that thing for years, wondering, well, what was that? That's what we mean by this. And Socrates, as I understand it, he said that this is a way to do it, is to take a person and just ask them a question that is designed in such a way to get them to think. Start them thinking. Don't answer for them. I have a real problem with this. I'm an explainer. As a teacher, I like to explain and explain and explain and explain and explain. I like to take a biology book and start in on the endocrine system and just explain and explain and explain and explain. I want to explain all the details. I'm not saying that's always wrong, but that is sometimes a mistake. That is sometimes a mistake. When you're looking at this technique, you're looking at a technique that raises the right questions so that the person is led, the student is led to think and think and think. Matthew chapter 16 is a good example of this. In Matthew chapter 16, verse 13, when Jesus came into the coast of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, saying, Whom do men say that I, the Son of Man, am? Now, did he know? Well, sure he knew. But he wanted them to think. And he wanted them to answer. And he follows it up with another question after they kind of give the kind of answers we do. You know, well, some say this and some say that and some say the other thing. Then he asks another question. Well, who do you say that I am? And this got them to thinking. This made them think, made them respond. Now, I know the problem in the classroom, just to be fair with you. Students like to sit there. If you're a fairly good lecturer, they like to listen to you. It seems they do. Some do. And if you don't make this a practice in yours and your teacher-student relationship, even when you do ask a good question, what do? Sit there. They won't answer. Just kind of look at you. And especially, this is especially true when you get beyond ninth grade, I have found out. Seventh and eighth graders will answer you a lot more quickly than will an 11th grader. By this time, apparently, culture has taught them that the thing to do is to sit and just kind of soak it in. Don't think too much. And if you do think, don't say it. This one encourages you to learn to draw it out of them anyway. To ask the questions, use this technique, and have them answer. I could tell a story right now, but I won't. You need to understand that Brother John and I used to teach together. And I would occasionally hear across the hallway Brother John ask somebody a question. And when they would silence. I have heard this go on for 10 minutes at a time already. Silence. Well, Bill? And sometimes it even got a little hairier than that. But he was on the right track. It's a great method. You ask a question, you expect the person to think and give an answer. Okay? Students learn when this happens. Other than that, they just sit there kind of with their mouth hanging open, and you might be a very good lecturer, and they may enjoy it, as far as that's concerned. But learn this method. Jesus used it. And it was good. Technique number 7. Am I on 7? Lost my number in here. Technique number 7 is indeed the lecture. Don't want to give you the idea that this is not used. It certainly is. Now, I use the term lecture. You could use the word sermon if you want. Jesus used it. Probably one of the most famous or one of the most well-known passages in Scripture is the teaching of Jesus known as the Sermon on the Mount. That's a sermon. Jesus sat down and he taught them. And it doesn't look as though it was a question-answer session. It was indeed what we would refer to as a lecture. Now, within the lecture, he uses a number of different techniques. These are not new ones. You've heard these over and over again. You do well to learn how to use them to your advantage. This is a subset now of the lecture. A, the parable. It's always been a little curious to me that we are actually given in Scripture the reason Jesus used the parable, which has not typically been my reason to use it. But Jesus said, when the disciples asked one time, why do you use parables? He said, well, I do this so that the truth is deliberately hidden from those who have closed eyes and closed ears. And they can't see it. You can. I don't quite know what to make of that in terms of a technique, because I have never, at least, deliberately designed something so that, or used a technique so that some people wouldn't understand and others would. Maybe somebody can give some kind of input in that, how a parable actually works, in that it permits some people to understand and others not to. But that's what Jesus said he used that technique for. A second method that is used within the context of the lecture is the story. Now, this one is a good one. There is hardly anything as powerful and effective as a story. As a teacher, I can tell you, you will enhance your skill as a teacher if you can tell a good story. If you know how to take even the well-known stories, Christopher Columbus or something like that, and not read it, hardly even refer to notes, just tell the story. My children to this day, even though they've heard the stories many times, their favorite thing in the evening is to sit down and just have me as their father tell them another Bible story. Daniel. They don't want me to read them. They want me to tell the story. Learn that technique. If you have this planned ahead of time, master the story well enough that you can tell it. Just eye contact, all the gestures, everything without reference somewhere else. You'd be surprised the power that that has when you can do it. Oh, by the way, even to this day, typically, Kyle or Erickson, one of our two little boys, will go get the Bible story book and they'll bring it to me because they know what I'm going to do. I'm actually going to read it ahead of time. Most of the time, I'm going to look at it again, even though I've told it just last year, maybe, or something like that. Another time, even if it's Daniel the Lion's Den, read the story, fix it in my mind one more time, tell it again. And it's amazing, almost every time you pick up another little nuance that you had not picked up before that you can add in that makes that story just live a little bit more. Learn that technique. It is one of the most powerful lecture methods you'll find, the story. Of course, we could talk about metaphors and allegories and those types of things that are used within the context of the lecture. I don't have time to do that. I'd like for you to turn yet to Luke chapter 10, and we'll look just at one time when Jesus was giving a teaching, and notice a number of these that we talked about. At work, as Jesus gives this teaching. Luke chapter 10, we'll begin at verse 25. Now keep in mind our general outline. First and foremost, he loved them. That technique's not in place, you're done for. Then we looked at discipleship, audible public prayer, rebuke, confrontation, adversity, opportunity, the Socratic method, the lecture. Let's look at this teaching that Jesus gave one time. Luke chapter 10, 25 to 37. And behold, a certain lawyer stood up and tempted him, saying, Master, what shall I do to inherit eternal life? Boy, a great opportunity to teach. When a student asks you a question, be ready. And Jesus was ready. He said unto him, he just returns question for question. Socratic method. Well, what is written in the law? How readest thou? So he says to him, well, what do you think? I want to know what your understanding is of this question. And the lawyer replies, thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, and with all thy soul, and with all thy strength, and with all thy mind, and thy neighbor as thyself. Good answer, Jesus says. Thou hast answered right. This do, and thou shalt live. But he willing to justify, Jesus said, well, fine. He answered your own question. The lawyer's not done. He says in verse 29, and who is my neighbor? Now, this is a different kind of question what Jesus was asking. This is a question designed to justify. Okay? Jesus answering said, he tells a story. A certain man went down from Jerusalem to Jericho. I would have loved to have heard Jesus tell this story. Just wondering how he would have, studied a little bit, started in, or just what his techniques were. We don't know. Went down from Jerusalem to Jericho and fell among thieves, which stripped him of his raiment and wounded him and departed, leaving him half dead. And by chance, there came down a certain priest that way. And when he saw him, he passed by on the other side. And you can just see Jesus maybe stopping there, pausing a little bit. A certain priest came down. Well, he passed by on the other side. Okay, he would have had this story told, I think, in some manner like that. And likewise, a Levite. And you can hear him underscore the word Levite in his story. When he was at the place, came and looked on him and passed by on the other side. But a certain Samaritan, notice all of the little nuances in the story. priest, Levite, Samaritan, all this designed in such a way to make the point. As he journeyed, came where he was, and when he saw him, he had compassion on him, and went to him, and bound up his wounds, pouring in oil and wine, and set him on his own beast, and brought him to an inn, and took care of him. And on the morrow, when he departed, he took out 2 pence, and gave them to the host, and said unto him, Take care of him. And whatsoever thou spendest more when I come again, I will repay thee. And now another question. Which now of these three thinkest thou was neighbor unto him that fell among the thieves? And he said, He that showed mercy on him. Then said Jesus unto him, Go and do thou likewise. See how he does this? Here is a problem. Here is a question that comes to him. He takes this thing. He turns it back to the person. He uses the story. Basically, the story ends up rebuking the man. All of these things are worked into this one piece of teaching. But again, I repeat and underscore, Jesus loved them unto the end. And if you do not, none of these techniques will work. Thank you.
For the most current Faith Builders recordings, visit ChristianLearning.org. And for more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit the DocForLearning.org.